year, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new movies, or new movie, Shadow in the Cloud. It's the only movie opening on the weekend of January 1st. Plus, I'm also going to be looking back at the best and the worst films of 2020. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring, finally, my review and deconstruction of Wonder Woman 1984. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Now, the piece of news that hit the hardest for me this week was the loss of Dawn Wells. She was 82 years old, and she died of complications from COVID. And this one hits really hard because it was one of those that hit right at the end of the year. I mean, it was like on the 30th, and it came out of nowhere. Not that she was a surprise, being that she was 82. It was that I didn't know she had COVID, and she's one of the last survivors. I believe she's the last surviving member of Gilligan's Island. Now, to a younger generation, because, you know, like my kids, they don't know what Gilligan's Island is and never really watched it. But I grew up with that stuff, and I grew up in the 70s and into the 80s. But you see, a lot of my TV that I watched was stuff from the 60s and the 70s, maybe a little bit from the 50s. But, you know, stuff like Bewitched and the Beverly Hillbillies and Green Acres and, of course, Gilligan's Island and the Brady Bunch and all this kind of stuff that was popular TV for primetime in the 60s but had made its way to syndication. And so even though the 70s had their own TV series in the evenings, a lot of the stuff that filled the time in the after-school slots and the syndicated programming was the sitcoms from the 60s. So I was a huge fan of Gilligan's Island. And like most boys in this country, I grew up with a crush on Marianne. And there's always the question. I was asked this week by another host, and the host said, there's always a debate. Was it Ginger or Marianne? And I'm like, it was never a debate. I have yet to meet somebody who thought Ginger was better than Marianne in terms of wanting to be with her, you know, have her as a girlfriend, as her a wife, and just in terms of just attractiveness and cuteness. Oh, sure, Ginger was glamorous, but she seemed exhausting. Marianne, the character, was down to earth, and she was sweet, and she was cute, and she was adorable, arguably a lot better looking than Ginger herself. And she ran those short shorts, you know, that the 60s short shorts. It was a great thing. And the crop top and the tied gingham shirts. I mean, she was the girl next door, and she was the ideal for the girl next door. It's sort of like when you talk like Archie comics, Betty and Veronica, a lot of people argued. I don't think there was much of an argument. I don't know anybody who chose Veronica. Veronica was she was a princess. She was excessive and would have been a pain in the butt to deal with. Betty was the right choice, 100% all the time. And I don't know anybody who chose Veronica over Betty in that hypothetical situation. Whereas, you know, like, there are some people who like Wilma over Betty Rubble. But when it came to Dawn Wells, she, to me, was one of the main reasons to watch Gilligan's Island. And she seemed to always have a good spirit about this sort of thing, even for the decades after her career was, you know, defined by that and really went into no other major places. She had some other spots. I think she was in the movie The Town That Dreaded Sundown. I think she was in that. And, you know, she had a couple run-ins with the law, but I think it was for like pot possession or something like that when she was in her 40s. But beyond just the fact that, you know, everybody remembers Dawn Wells, it's sort of like when Yvonne Craig passed a couple years ago, everyone's like, oh my God, Batgirl. You know, the green girl from Star Trek, you know, these iconic things that transcend generations. And yeah, I know it's hedonistic, and I know it's sort of you know, at a certain time crassed and maybe just talk about it of how attractive she was. But she, there was a personality. There's just a freshness and a niceness to the personality that made her better than Ginger. But beyond just the loss of a beloved actress, it's a stark reminder that COVID's still out there. And we've got a vaccine that's rolling out. But you got to remember, you got to get a second dose. Yeah, there was a story I saw on the internet about this nurse who had become infected with COVID, even though she got the vaccine. Because the vaccine, the first dose is only 50% effective, and you got to wait for it to build up in your system. And then you got to get the second dose. To get to that 95 protection rate, you need to take time to do it. So don't go jumping back into everything right now. You know, don't open up all the bars right now. That would be premature. Let's let this thing run its course and not fight against the science. And the fact that we're still losing people, whether it's Don Wells or another one of the other 3,000 people a day who are dying from this disease, you know, let's do our part to keep everybody as safe as possible. And rest in peace, Don Wells. You will be missed. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first trailer I want to hit is The Mauritanian, which is in theaters on February 19th.
I'm Nancy Hollander. This is my associate. We wish to represent you.
We are seeking the death penalty, but if we miss something, this guy goes home. Let's get to it.
The U.S. government is holding upwards of 700 prisoners in Guantanamo. Since when did we start locking people up without a trial in this country?
That's a lot of case files.
The prosecution won't show us the evidence they have against you. It's all redacted.
You got a problem? Take it up with the government.
He has been interrogated. He has been held against his will for 6 years without a single charge being laid against him.
This is Kevin MacDonald's latest film, and he always tackles heavier subjects, you know, some political subjects often. You know, he's done historical pieces and things that do deal with either politics of the region, like The Last King of Scotland, or, you know, American politics. And what looks interesting about this movie is it's not a debate on whether somebody's guilty or not. It's whether they get due process. And if that's due to somebody who's not a citizen, and whether it should be. And even if you're not a citizen, whether holding somebody with no charges, no actual sort of transparency, whether that's a good thing or not. Because while it might serve a certain internal purpose, you know, is that something that we believe in the United States? So this looks like it's going to be an interesting discussion piece at the very least. The next one I want to talk about is Coming to America, number 2, which is coming to TO Prime on March 5th.
You must heed my words before I'm gone, my son. Now, you will be king. But the throne must pass to a male heir. Hakim, it appears you have a son. He must be found.
Prepare the royal jet. We are going back to America.
I'm not a huge fan of taking a movie that's 30 years old and suddenly making a sequel out of it. We saw that happen much more often in TV series where they revise TV series where they reboot something. They did that with like Will and Grace. They did that with like Murphy Brown. And look, I understand the fan service and it certainly serves a sect of the population. But I don't think that's really great TV storytelling. I'd rather, you know, like something like Star Wars, and you know, Star Wars fans can argue with me on this. Doing the new sequels and doing Mandalorian and doing all these other extended universe stuff, that's enriching the universe and taking on new stories. It's not just reuniting all the original characters and hoping they're going to go somewhere. Cause I mean, while you have some of the original characters in these continuation movies, they're meant to do a series rather than, you know, sort of just kind of circle the wagons again. So I don't know. I mean, sure, this is going to be funny. I'm sure it's going to have plenty of laughs in it. And it has some funny stuff in the trailer. Absolutely. I don't know how necessary it's going to be. But by March, we're going to be itching for something to watch because everything has moved out of the major release time frame. So we'll see what happens. I'm cautiously curious about this one. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the worst of 2020. welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into our first piece of 2020 retrospective, and that is talking about the worst films of the year. Now, this is a little bit different than how other years have gone, because usually it's a slate of movies that got released in theaters, but because of the pandemic, I had to dip into options of movies that either went to limited release or not released at all in theaters and just took a pivot and went straight to video. But what's funny is I usually love doing the worst of the year list because it gives me a chance to vent my spleen on some of the crap that I've had to watch over the years. This has not been nearly as fun because it's so haphazard. It feels almost unfair. It feels like I'm picking a volleyball team, but all the kids aren't there yet. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of other garbage that just never got released or I didn't get a chance to see. Every critic who sees as much as they can, there's always going to be blind spots. So keep that in mind as we run through the list. So I'm going to be playing the trailers. And the first one is a movie that came out almost a year ago, and a lot of people even forgot about it. I forgot about it until I was going through my list of movies, and that is The Rhythm Section.
I lost my family 3 years ago.
I'll find the people who did this. I'll kill every last one of them. I need your help.
Stop. Don't panic. Be calm. Be still. You gotta get your rhythm section under control. Think of your heart as the drums, your breathing as the bass. That's the easy part.
What's the hard part?
Living with it.
This was a movie with Blake Lively as trying to be kind of a James Bond kind of character. They've been trying to do this for a sort of female James Bond for years. The closest I think they've ever come is with Atomic Blonde, with Charlize Theron, but the movie itself is just depressing and boring, and most of it's the training, and most of it's her not being good at what she does, and then you just don't get the sense that she's a well-developed character. She's just this punished, depressed, unfortunate soul that you are tethered to as you watch this movie. So while Blake Lively, I think, has some acting chops, you don't see it in this film. Now, number four on the list is a smaller movie. It came out in limited release, and that is Triggered.
Been a long time since I taught all of you. So good to see you again. Tonight's your final lesson.
Is this like laser tag?
They're timers.
We're in the middle of the woods with bombs strapped to our chest.
Get this thing off of me!
What happens when these timers hit zero, huh?
He didn't tell you the rules.
What rules, Bobby?
We can steal each other's time to stay alive.
So the more you kill, the more time you get.
This was one I reviewed a couple months ago. It was, I don't know, I don't think it made it to theaters, but it made it on VOD. And it's trying to be a thriller, sort of a slasher movie, a tip of the hat to the slasher movies, about a bunch of kids in the woods and they get these vests that count down and then they'll die. Part of the problem is they have way too many characters in it to make you care about any of them. And B, you hate all the main characters and they're so awful to each other. You don't even have a final girl you can root for. It's just, you're just kind of counting down, waiting for everything to get blown up. And that's no way to make a movie about characters that you're supposed to like. The next release that I'm going to put on the list, number three, worst film of 2020, is a movie called Synchronic.
What's going on with you?
I want to know that there's meaning in the things I do.
If you're watching this, I'm probably trying to convince you of something pretty unbelievable, or I'm dead.
Do anything to get her back, but this is, I mean, the next dose could kill you.
There are things that are far worse than death.
This one starred Anthony Mackie and Jamie Dornan. What's weird about it is if you actually look up the Rotten Tomatoes score, it's like 80%. A lot of critics like this movie. Not me. I did not. I thought it was a boring movie. I thought the characters were poorly constructed. I don't think that they gave you much of an arc, and the characters were unlikable. And those are the things that I have trouble, no matter how clever or creative your movie is. And while this did have some interesting things because it was about these paramedics that found this street drug that gave you the ability to travel through time or get unstuck in time, to borrow a term from Kurt Vonnegut Jr., it just didn't work, and I didn't like spending time with the characters. So that's the big thing, and it was just a slag to get through. So that's number three. Number two is a little bit off the beaten path, and that is Don't Look Deeper.
It happened again. Third time this year.
What happened, baby? What happened?
Memories get taken from me sometimes.
Where did you go? I've been texting you all night.
We can't keep doing this. It's not right.
There's no choice. If she becomes aware, it's only a matter of time before they become aware.
You really made a mess this time. Does she know where she came from?
This was a feature-length movie broken up into chunks on the short-lived web platform Quibi for Quick Bites. And if you remember, Quibi had a big launch at the early part of the year, and it just was unfortunately timed with the pandemic. But the movie itself is very shallow. It's about this girl who discovers that she's an android and her parents had built her. But because it was broken up in these like 10-minute sections, there was no time to really develop any sort of plot or character. So it's just all right there on the surface. And it has some performances that, you know, like Emily Mortimer and Don Cheadle play these parts in there, and they really, really try, and I give them credit, but they just didn't have anything to work with. So you had some really good people working on a really terrible movie. Plus, it was directed by Catherine Hardwicke, and she's known for that incredibly emotionally dense film, Twilight. I said it with all sarcasm attached. It's no big surprise that this movie kind of stunk as well. But it didn't hold a candle to the number one movie, which I do not have a trailer for. I do apologize. That's partly because it doesn't exist. And that is the film Plandemic, number one worst movie of 2020. It didn't even get a regular release. In fact, I don't even know if the full movie ever got released widely. They had like a 40-minute, like half of the movie released on YouTube, and I watched it because I wanted to cover it. And Plandemic is a massive chunk of misinformation about the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic. It deals with conspiracy theories and anti-vaccine discussions and debunked science by debunked scientists, and it plays in rumor and speculation, and it's absolute hogwash. And it was put out there to push back against any sort of responsible health authority trying to do some things that sort of limit the spread of the disease. And here's the thing. There are terrible movies every year. You know, they're like, Don't Look Deeper is a terrible movie, but it didn't send anybody to the hospital. Michael Bay can make as many Transformers movies as he wants, but nobody ends up in the ICU because Michael Bay made a crappy movie. This film did actual damage to public health. It sent people to the hospital by undermining faith in the public health system. And for that, it's evil. I mean, for that, it did the opposite of good. It made the world a worse place. And that's why Plandemic and garbage like it, these conspiracy theory nonsense, everything from flat earth crap to anti-vax crap, does harm to society, and that's why it's the number one worst movie of 2020. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the best of 2020 when I return. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Now let's talk about the best films that 2020 had to offer. Just like the worst films list, this is going to be a little bit clunky because there's a lot of movies that we didn't even get to see. We didn't get to see the new James Bond movie. We didn't get to see Dune. There's a whole bunch of stuff that got shifted that we didn't even get a chance to see. And that's a shame because there were some really great things peppered in there among all the misery of 2020. And I'm going to count them down from number five to number one, my list. Number five is Vast of Night.
718 here, WOTW. We got a sound we'd like to play that seems to be bouncing around the valley tonight.
Yes, I have a story that might be helpful.
I can tell you what's going on.
The sound we heard out in the desert. It was coming from thousands of feet higher than anything could fly.
They've come here before. They've liked this place. They always have.
What's going on? There's something in the sky.
This was a great little Twilight Zone homage film. It was just a science fiction throwaway piece. It ended up on Amazon, and it was one of those that was just such a nice surprise. It was such a fresh film and something different and just done very, very effectively. A lot of it's done in these big, long takes, and it's creepy and it's eerie and it's believable in a weird sort of way. I absolutely loved this one. I thought it was a nice little, what I call, pandemic gem. Something that I probably wouldn't have swerved into had I not been searching for something different to cover, because there was no movies in the theaters, especially at that time, because that was like in April when that came out. So yes, Vast of Night is at number 5. At number 4, we have one that just came out on Disney Plus, and that is Soul.
I'm Joe. I teach middle school band. Got it, go for it. Today started out as the best day of my life.
Back here tonight, first show's at 7.
Yes! Woohoo!
You know what that's gonna say? Joe Gardner! I did it! I got the gig!
Must have been sudden for you.
There I am! What are we waiting for?
Wait!
The thing I love about Pixar is they can do stuff so out of the box. This is obviously done by the guy who did Up and the guy who did Inside Out. And I said this last week when I was reviewing it. I said, it blows my mind that somebody in Hollywood greenlit this. And that's why only Pixar could have done it. Now, it's a wonderful movie, and it's brilliant, and it's fantastic, and it's got a lot in there and a lot to deconstruct and stuff to unpack. But it's a kind of movie that a little kid can watch and take away a lot. And then a grown-up can watch and take away something even richer and more developed. It manages to hit on all different levels, and that's part of what the beauty of Pixar is. And, you know, no one else would have greenlit this movie. You couldn't have gotten this movie made anywhere other than Pixar, because Pixar's the only place that's going to have the guts to do something this out of the box and this esoteric. But Soul is just a beautiful piece. It's a wonderful piece. And it was a gem of the year, not just a gem of the pandemic. So yeah, that's why Soul ends up at the number 4 spot. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with our best of the year list. And that includes number 3, which is Wolf Walkers.
You can come out now. You're a wolf walker. I met a girl in the forest. Who has magic powers. When she sleeps, she turns into a wolf. She's a wolf walker. Something's happened to me. Be a wolf!
What's funny is if you go back, if you were to look at my top 10 list of the year over the last 20 years, you would find that I usually end up having animated films in there somewhere. Sometimes they're like the top 3 movies. And every now and then there's a list where the animated films just didn't cut the mustard that year. But there's usually a couple animated films that make it to the top 10 list. And this year is no different in the top 5. Wolf Walkers is produced by Cartoon Saloon, which is the company that did Song of the Sea and The Secret of the Kells. And it's this Irish company that does this very unique style of animation, almost looking like wood carvings. And it's beautifully done. It's beautifully animated. And it tells this very poignant story about this girl in feudal Ireland where it's being occupied by the British. And she's a British girl who befriends an Irish wolf walker in the woods, basically these shapeshifters. And of course, the British want to cut down as much of the forest and build out as much as they can, but she wants to save her friends. And it's a wonderful little piece that balances the need for growth and the need for society with the need for a certain degree of ecological preservation and a certain value in the animals and wildlife around you, but also with an understanding that people are growing as well and need a place to live. It doesn't come down on a preachy side. And that's part of the thing that makes Wolf Walkers such a genuinely sweet little movie. It's on Apple TV right now. So if you have that app, go check it out. It's absolutely worth seeing. The next one I want to hit in the number two is Borat subsequent movie film.
14 years ago, I released a movie film which brought great shame to Kazakhstan. But now I was instructed to return to Yankee Land to carry out secret mission. I'm here to give my daughter as a gift to someone close to the throne.
I really like this.
Let us present Sandra Jessica Parker Drummond.
Your daddy has a lot to learn.
My daddy is the smartest person in the whole flat world.
I was a huge fan of the first Borat when that came out in 2006. It made me laugh so hard I almost hurt myself. And same thing with this one. I remember watching it. I got an early screener and I'm watching it with my headphones on and I'm just laughing hysterically and my kids think I'm insane. And my son said, you were watching Borat last night. I'm like, yeah, I absolutely was. He's like, okay. I couldn't keep control of myself. It's such a funny movie and it's relevant too. It's hard to think. You know, I said earlier that I don't like these sort of resurgence of a TV show after 14 years or something like that. But this one, I think, is a worthy sequel because it's not just about what happened in 2006. It takes the character of Borat and applies what he stands for and through his own connections, what his daughter stands for, and puts them against a 2020 filter. And it's incredibly effective. And one of the greatest things about a Borat movie is it makes you put a mirror to yourself and the people around you. And the things that it shows, yeah, some things are contrived, but not everything. And it's amazing the access they got in this film. It's a great movie, and it's very relevant to everything going on today. And then now we've got our number one movie of the year, and that is The Trial of the Chicago 7.
Martin's dead. Bob is dead. Jesus is dead. They tried it peacefully. We gonna try something else.
These rebels without a job.
They're a threat to national security.
This revolution, we may have to hurt somebody's feelings.
Get on the street!
This, I believe, was gonna go to theaters, but in the pandemic got pivoted to Netflix. Now, Netflix did a limited release, but the majority of people who've seen this movie watched it on the streaming service, and it is just a whip-sharp film. It's written and directed by Aaron Sorkin, and the dialogue is great, but it's not overly Sorkinized, if that makes any sense. It doesn't feel overly contrived because it's still trying to give a realistic interaction between these characters. It is an effective film, extremely well done, painfully relevant to stuff that's still going on today. I mean, it looks at people being incarcerated and then put to trial for a riot that happened outside the Republican National Convention in the 70s. And you compare that to how authorities handled some protests this year, how hard it is to divine the truth from that chaos, and it's to find out who's responsible for what and who you can actually pin anything on. It will answer a lot of the stupid things that people are saying on social media when they don't understand things. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be reviewing the new film Shadow in the Cloud and talk about the home cinema roundup with my review of Wonder Woman 1984. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the new film that is in theaters this weekend, and that is Shadow in the Cloud. A woman hitches a ride on a B-17 bomber in World War II with a secret package to face a real enemy in the sky.
The hell are you doing here?
I'm commissioned to this flight.
Captain!
We haven't got time for this right now. Put her in the Sperry until we get up in the air.
I'm supposed to guard this.
I'll guard it for you.
Contents are confidential.
What's your name, honey?
Flight Officer Garrett.
Ain't no women in the Air Corps.
I'm a flight mechanic and a pilot.
You're not a pilot. You're a delivery girl.
Did you hear that?
There's something on top of the plane.
Guys.
The movie stars Chloe Grace Moretz, who most people would recognize, going all the way back to stuff like Hit Girl in the movie Kick-Ass. And she's been in a bunch of other stuff. She's making a relatively decent transition into grown-up roles. I mean, she still looks very young, so she still sort of plays that teenager. I mean, she's in her 20s, early 20s, so it's age appropriate. But she could still play like a high school teenager. But, you know, like this one, you know, she's a woman in her 20s actually living a regular life. I knew nothing of this movie. I knew it had to do with an airplane, a bomber in World War II, and that was it. And I watched it, and it was a surprise, a very pleasant surprise. She gets on this plane, and of course, you know, it's World War II, and it's the 40s, and so the guys are very dismissive and crass and insulting to her and don't want a woman on the plane, but she has orders. And they basically just shove her down into the gun turret because they don't have room for her in the rest of the fuselage. So they put her down there, and a good chunk of the movie, like a third of the movie, takes place of her in that gun turret. And what she's seeing and, you know, talking to him on the radio. And it starts off, and it's like, okay, it's this basically is World War II drama where she's got something and she's concealing something, but she's got an ulterior plan and everything. And oh, and then she sees a Japanese plane and she's trying to convince them what she sees and then being able to shoot. But then there's like gremlins show up, which is, I mean, it's in the trailer. You see the gremlins in the trailer. And what's so funny is that at a certain point, it turns into that Nightmare at 20,000 Feet Twilight Zone episode with William Shatner. There's a man on the wing of the plane. And that's what she's trying to convince them, because gremlins were such a, they're such a mythos in World War II. And it's a shame that there hasn't been more done about them. I think when Joe Dante made the movie Gremlins in 1984, he killed any sort of use of the term, because that's what most people think of, as opposed to what they originally came from, which were the bombers. Whenever something would go wrong with a plane, they'd blame it on the gremlins. And then the movie just gets wackier and wackier, and then there's crazy stunts going on and big action sequences. And as the movie just continued, I was just getting more and more into it. I was like, oh wow, throw more crazy stuff at me. I know that the physics doesn't work, but doggone it, I was like, I was surprised to see this movie go where it went. And it just keeps going all the way to the end. And that's why I love the heck out of this movie. It was one of these things that I was, you know, because generally the first movie of the year is pretty awful. I mean, it's just fun. I say, if you want to see a movie that just goes completely bat poop crazy, watch this movie, because that's what it is. So I'm going to say that Shadow in the Cloud totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today, I want to talk about Wonder Woman 1984. I know I've talked about it a bunch over the last several weeks, but I was unable to see it before the show last week. But I've now seen it, and I want to talk a little bit about it, because I kind of give my opinion. I mean, it's the first huge movie that we've had come out since probably Tenet, if you want to say that as a huge, big blockbuster movie. So let's talk about that. Diana Prince faces off against a TV personality with magical powers and a co-worker who gains new powers overnight.
Welcome to the future. Life is good, but it can be better. And why shouldn't it be? All you need is to want it. Think about finally having everything you always wanted.
I can save today, but you can save the world.
Steve.
Now, a lot of people watch this on Christmas Day or Christmas weekend. I mean, it made something like $16, $17 million in theaters, which is not bad for theaters not always being at capacity. Something like $38 million when you throw in the Canadian dollars. And I mean, it's doing well enough for the pandemic, and considering it's available on HBO Max. And there's numbers out there. It's very hard to discern any sort of real numbers yet. But basically, Warner Brothers is happy. They said they had plenty of new subscribers. They had plenty of content boost. There are a lot of people using the service, a lot of people signing on. I mean, to the point that there are some places that were having trouble with the streams on Christmas Day where, you know, they weren't able to project it in 4K or they were getting some outages here and there, that's bad because then people are going to be irked that they can't watch it. But it's good in the sense that a lot of people were watching it. That meant that their little marketing ploy worked. And I don't remember a movie since Last Jedi that has polarized people more than this film. I mean, there are people that are going, this is the worst movie ever. It's so bad. And here's the thing. You know, I've watched it twice since it's come out. And I did because I wanted to see it the second time after all this reaction to it and all the negative responses to it. And I got to say, first of all, I mean, is it as good as the first one? No, it's not. But was it ever going to be? Because you have to look at the fact that the first Wonder Woman was a movie about World War One. It was essentially a movie where the main character just happens to be a demigod that's kind of thrown in there. But it's a story of World War One. It's this somewhat, and it's this opening arc. The origin stories are always very easy to do because they always have something for the main superhero character to achieve. Whether it's acceptance of themselves or acceptance of their powers or becoming the hero, it's a lot more different when you start doing a sequel. That's why, you know, sometimes sequels are really good. I thought Batman Returns was better than the first Batman. I thought Spider-Man 2 was better than the first Spider-Man. But then there's movies that stumble. I think Superman 2 was not nearly as good as the first Superman back in the 70s. I think a lot of people will agree Iron Man 2 wasn't as stable and well put together as the first Iron Man. So this is not uncommon. But there's a lot packed in here. I think one of the things they're doing is Patty Jenkins is even trying to swerve farther away from that dreary, drab look and feel of Zack Snyder's movies. And she wanted to give it some sort of pop and some sort of flash and some sort of pizzazz. And throwing it in 1984, where you got this neon-colored Rubik's Cube look of everything, that makes it a little bit easier to make it pop. And the story exists outside of the Snyder gloomiverse that he's got going on. So this film does dip into the nostalgia, but the 84 is not in there just for nostalgia. It has a little bit of that it draws from the story 1984, George Orwell's. I mean, it's not heavily deep and it's some of it's, there's a lot of stuff kind of crammed in there to deconstruct out of it, but there's certainly a look at 1984 in there. I mean, you've got the bad guy played by Pedro Pascal, the guy Max Lord. He's in the movie, but he doesn't show up actually in person for 30 minutes. Every time you see him, he's on TV. He's like Big Brother. And even when his final plan comes to fruition, he is that Big Brother reaching out and controlling everybody. And so there's a lot to tie into the George Orwell theme. I think it's not as prevalent and it's not as obvious as you might think it is. But it's also meant to be what the old comic books were or what the old TV series. I mean, back in 1984, I can't remember whether the Wonder Woman TV series with Linda Carter was on at the time or if it had recently ended, but it certainly was of that era. And that's the kind of movie we saw. That's the kind of show that Wonder Woman was back in the 70s and 80s. And I think they were trying to capture that a little bit. Yeah, it gets a little goofy. The story idea with this sort of wish fulfillment thing, that's a little bit weird. But see, that's sort of the mystical element of the demigods in this movie. That's sort of the point of going outside of science, so to speak. Because, you know, even like Superman, it's this rigid scientific reasons that he has these powers, whether hers are derived from the gods. So you can have this mystical element to it. So I didn't think that was out of bounds. There's all this talk about, you know, how she brings back Steve Trevor, and there's some people overanalyzing that, which is absurd and silly. Overall, it's a fun movie, and I'm watching it a second time, I enjoyed it more because your expectations are where they need to be. And it has some great action sequences. It's a lot of fun. It's not an overpowering or depressing or heavy thing, which is, it's exhausting to watch some of the Zack Snyder stuff. So, yeah, I enjoyed Wonder Woman 1984 quite a bit. So I'm going to have to say that Wonder Woman 1984 totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
And that's it for this week. I need to go. Next week, when I come back, I'm going to be talking about Pieces of a Woman and Dissident. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.